Hey everyone, we are back. Slowly but surely, it's podcast number 19.
You left me still, right? So I have no
incentive. Yeah, it's my bad, okay. We are not in the same office anymore. So, yeah, but still we got together and we thought, okay, let's have a little unprepared podcast number 19.
Because I have a new t-shirt.
Because you have a new t-shirt and we have to talk about this specific t-shirt.
I think it's actually a good-looking one.
It's a very good-looking one. It's a sad story that we don't have a vodcast, right? So that's maybe step two.
I think people will not enjoy a vodcast.
Yeah.
So you have the agenda.
Yeah, I have the agenda, but it's a very sparse one. So yeah, we have, like, that's the...
We have the last podcast is a million trillion years ago.
Yeah, let
and the
me
next
check
one
when
will be a million trillion years ahead. Let's be
like
honest.
Last one was in November 2017.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of half a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But yeah, maybe we can make it, but maybe we can't. We will see. Yeah. We don't make promises.
You so did also a lot of travel. Basically, you went to countries.
Countries I went
never known to men before.
No, I went from this continent in all directions.
And it's in the morning, so we have to drink some coffee too.
Yeah,
and yeah, I guess people know that our voices are still.
Yeah, we
sleepy.
Have the same semi good.
Do we start with San Francisco, where you were at the DockerCon, or we had that covered? When was the last DockerCon?
No, the DockerCon was in October.
Okay,
The last time I was going to the supercomputing and then to San Francisco. This is what we plan to have at IB19 in November 2017.
Okay, so just give us an update on the HPC. I think the DockerCon is, everybody knows it.
You
can now use your Compose file with Kubernetes.
That's awesome.
Only in the enterprise version, right?
Yeah, for big clusters, yeah, in the enterprise version. So you need Dockerprize Enterprise Edition platform. But for Docker for Mac, Docker for Windows, you can use it there out of the box. So the developer versions or the community versions, community editions for desktop have it.
So that was probably the biggest announcement on the last DockerCon.
Yeah, but I think we talked about the DockerCon in a previous episode.
Okay.
We had a DockerCon thingy.
Okay, and then there was Christmas, and then I got a new human resource at home.
Yeah.
A new Lisp programmer. A new shining star.
You never give up, right?
On the S expressions. The first one is more into ponies, but maybe the last one will be.
Yeah, don't give up hope.
Yeah.
I mean, they will eventually converge. Everyone will converge to Lisp.
The name of the human resource, like the nickname of the name of the human resource, is actually the last baby that goes together with a Star Wars film. But no, that went lucky, and I was quite busy doing helping out in that situation.
Because you're a good father and a good husband.
Partially. And then. January, February, nothing really happened because there's this stupid law taking effect in May from the European Union where every IT company has to make sure that data is...
GDPR, General Data Privacy Regulations.
Is privatized, and then there are different approaches to this problem. And I think it's very curious. Not curious is not the right term. It's very exciting to see how we built databases 10 years ago, which are especially made for not editing anything in the history. And then you have a law where you need to do exactly that.
The funniest story about this GDPR, I think, is the DNS. Have you heard about the DNS? I can't.
It's probably unlawful.
But they only knew this for 2 years. Oh. And then they said, the US government will kick us out and tell the Europeans that, everyone has to apply except us, right? Because we have the services who is service and we need this.
Don't be evil.
But it's not the mantra of Google anymore, don't be evil, right? They
kicked it?
Kicked it out for like half a year ago. So
they are trying to do like an honest marketing policy now?
Yep. they beefed up on the messaging now.
Join us, we are evil.
Yeah, not like the we don't say what we are. I think that's what they are now.
Later when we are I like yesterday I had saw a talk from Audi. It was so ridiculous, but I like that's just it.
Yeah, okay, teaser. So that sums up the spring, I guess. Like something happened.
Oh yeah, snow to Easter.
Snow to Easter.
That was also good.
The important pieces. I mean,
and then Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I went like everywhere to talk about containers and HPC and AI. And AI, what do you know about deep learning and this buzzwordy things? It's super interesting, I think. I mean, you have a much better understanding of math, in my opinion, than me.
Probably.
And I
sorry.
That's normally where you say, ah, come on, no.
No, in this case, I would say probably I have.
So, and I kind of understand all this jazz to some extent, at least. I mean, I wouldn't say I understand everything yet, but I think I'm on my way to become more an AI expert somehow. And I think that would be very, very cool for you to do as well. And
yeah, I would like to. I like what I learned at university is, I think, still only the basics, but there are just some basics you cannot get around with. So machine is set to learn if it improves its performance over the time by learning from previous examples and is able to do some clever thing with unseen data, basically, or unseen situations. If it can adapt to it, it's said to be. This is a learning system.
Yeah, you try to do intuition, come up with an intuition, and then the best intuition wins.
Yeah, and then you have actually high level algorithms with set. You have hypothesis tests where you go, I build out a hypothesis space, and then I try to deduct it from like what I've known already.
Yeah.
And the basic things is a lot of linear algebra and Bayesian statistics. Neuronal nets and deep neuronal nets are just, I think actually we, like my professor told me, it's going to the wrong direction because it's still a black box.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't explain any phenomena really like physics do. Like they have a phenomena, they do an empirical test, and then they try to like, what's that, prove an estimated outcome, and then if that outcome happens and you can do it a million times and it always the same outcome, then we have we found some really good thing, basically a rule. And
I have to do like,
and with AI systems these days you have these nets, yeah, they seem to be very impressive and achieve things, but it's still about finding, yeah, building huge relationship matrices of features, finding latent variables, like things that are not obvious in the data set by itself, and statistically computing meaningful vectors within that space to say, well, if this comes and this comes and this comes, then this will happen.
Yeah, but this is not, I mean, this is what deep learning is about, right? You want to come up with intuition so that you can put this model, this net, on a little thingy device that is like very low powered that can recognize stuff.
What's the inter guy again there?
The inter guy?
Saudi Arabia? We like when we were in San Francisco.
No,
last
but
year.
There was one cool guy from the Tokyo Institute of whatever, National Lab.
Yeah, you can build basically that model and you have this milliwatt chip that will just like do the classification upon the model.
Yeah, and there was one guy, I forgot his name, but I can look it up. All right, anyhow, I think it was Roy. ROI from the Tokyo Institute of Technology, and he was explaining it very well, and he was explaining it very emphatic, so he was like looking at the audience, and when they blanked he explained it in a little slightly different way. So
interesting.
And
yeah, that's a good talker then.
And and especially like deep learning, it's like and afterwards I tried to fiddle my little example, like how I understood what he was talking about on a little piece of paper, and I went to him and I said, yeah, nah, no, not quite, but like this, and he explained it to me again. So yeah, that was pretty cool. And But yeah, I mean, this is two things, and we shouldn't talk too much about it. But I think my wrap up would be that you have like learning phase where you need a lot of computational power because you have to come up with, and I think intuition is the correct like thing to how to think about deep learning. Because intuition, you don't know why you have this intuition. It's just like your gut says.
That's not science. That's wiggledy woggledy, I make gold out of water bullshit.
But this is if you have a model out of a deep learning network, that's what you have. You cannot explain why this outcome comes.
But that's not like we as humanity shouldn't go for that. It would
but
just kill you.
We humans are the same. Like, we have intuition. We work on, like,
no,
you
intuition.
Look at Lisp code and you get big eyes and say, Lisp code.
Yeah,
because... That's like, your neural net is
because there is
like
no
that.
Mystique in it. But in these data, humans cannot have insights in it. In these models, you don't, like... What does it tell you if the third exponent of, a very complicated function is, like, 3.8, 10 digits, blah, 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 something.
But if I would have a model of your Lisp affection, then I could ask the model, is this something that Hagen would get excited about? And if the model says, then we'll say, okay, cool, I can ping it to him.
Yeah, but what you build is I'm still not convinced because we don't educate ourselves. We just outsource tasks that we are too stupid about or too that we cannot... like really do. And I have no like I for instance plane landing with British Airways was a horror because it was a human landing on the first time and it was an automated landing on the second time. Yeah, the automated landing was better. So like stop doing it. Stop flying a plane, human.
No,
it's
but
okay.
this is yeah,
or driving the car or like I'm fine with it. It's just that we don't like our horizon of insights in the world doesn't grow with deep learning. That's my critique,
no.
I guess.
Yeah, and this is a whole new level, and I think this is maybe the wrap-up, the whole new level of shit in, shit out on like an exponential function.
But these frameworks are there, and we should all learn it. I think it's still good to know what's going on, and even if you can save programming with it, it's even better. So I think many tasks that where we go...
Why don't you think that we humans are good in programming?
No. since 15 years, I can state from my experience that like programming is... That's not going to work with humans.
Something that we should do.
Or there's a particular... No, I don't say that.
Okay, cool.
So Dubai was like you just like I heard DJs get killed over there, but you weren't DJing and we're not using crystal meth, I guess. So you survived Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Oh, that was kind of it was interesting in a sense that I mean you have some assumptions or some things you expect.
Yep. Prejudgments.
Prejudgment.
Say it like it is.
And it was pretty nice. I talked at a lot of universities, like had in workshops and stuff. And the audience was two-thirds women and one-third men.
Yeah, I told that yesterday somebody I know, and that person was very why? Like we would normally our prejudgment in Europe is. These are all sexist Muslim countries and they don't support women. That's like what you hear in media in Europe. But then you go for a fact onto a university and then the mix, like we as an industry complain there's not enough women in tech. But then these countries try like change something in their educational system or something. I don't know how, but you report something totally different from
that. I mean, that was two-thirds women, and this was mostly students of the university. It's fine, right? And the men maybe were like, most of them were like attendees of the conference. So they were bored, and no, not all. But as you like, when you listen to talks, you're like,
Where's my iPad?
What can I win? Where could I put my business card? And the women were all like, listening and asking questions and fiddling and noting every word. Every word we spoke was like, we saw Twitter pics where they wrote down everything we said. So when I saw this, I was cautious to not talk too much, which is hard for me, as you know, because then if you derail too much, then
guy from Germany talks about, gets everything completely right. Awesome person.
No, but and what you said is, why is it? And my gist or my take is that, first, women are allowed to go to university only recently, or not recently. I don't know how long, but yeah, 4 or 5 years or so, not much longer. And they are going to be allowed to drive and to make more like contributions to the society. And I think this is because like 2/3 of the population is under 30. And they have to come up with so many new jobs because, the population is so young. In Egypt, for instance, they have 90 million people and they have to come up with 700,000 new jobs every year to just keep the current education employment rate. And in Saudi Arabia, it's no different, I think. So they have to come up with new jobs, and so they encourage people to study. And 70% of the graduates in IT in MINT are women. Whereas that's awesome. In Germany, it's not even 7, I think.
No, I can tell you, it was like we were roughly 100 with 4 women.
Yeah.
So it's
so
like
it's about 4%.
4%, yeah. And then like the women who made it was 1%. So
yeah.
I mean, to be fair, there were not much more men, but it's it's ridiculous. And then we like I think the argument is quite interesting how they build up their system to get to these numbers.
Yeah, and they have a lot of money to. I mean, not a lot of, a lot of money to set aside to spend for this stuff, right? They will bring like Saudi Aramco to an IPO, which is supposed to get like $1 trillion, so $1 billion in European things, the biggest IPO ever, and most of the money is poured into beefing up the education and getting ready for the oil-free economy. I mean, not oil-free.
I think that's totally communistic behavior. You shouldn't put any money in education.
Yeah,
systems.
That's true. I mean,
social security
and
that's
education.
Stupid.
It's
that's stupid
idea.
Health insurance, stupid, and education also.
And they will learn this in the long run, right? Like we did. We tried it like after the Second World War, and we
have
we
a big brother who tells us to, like, and we follow him, and that's good. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, cool. So satire section is also over now.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't satire. I was quite honest about it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, wrap up. It was fun. It was interesting. I saw a lot of different places, and most importantly, or also important, was that it was 30 degrees, and in Germany at this time it was -11.
I'm not jealous at all.
Oh.
It would like
it's
it would
just
make
the places you have to go.
My skin would lose water in these temperatures, and I don't like that. I need to drink then more water, and that makes me busy, and I hate it.
Yeah, no, that's not good.
Warm weather, who needs that?
Oh,
so can we talk about my new T-shirt?
Yeah, we can talk about your new T-shirt. I just struggle with our recording system.
Are we recording?
Yeah, sure we are recording. But I
don't fiddle with the knobs then.
No, I wanted to insert a new marker, but somehow.
The marker button is gone.
Here we go. Okay, yeah, let's talk about the Kafka Summit 2018.
Yeah, and that was actually in London. So I never been to London before, and I have to say,
really?
I was never.
It's so close.
So
yet so far.
We had the whole Sunday afternoon, and we were going through Westminster Park and going to the Buckingham Palace.
Did you try to get the London accent going, just like you act on it now?
I'm trying to.
It's not a video podcast, but it looks like, oh, la, la.
People are really speaking like that. They are all excited about their language, and I think it's quite nice. And then I didn't cover that. I didn't got that, but the new baby was born, I guess.
Yeah,
in the king's family or king, what?
I saw this weird, this guy in a costume like ringing the bell and baby is there, it's healthy, God save the queen. Yeah,
so we were, like, there was quite a big crowd in front of the Buckingham Palace on that Sunday evening. And it's lovely, I tell you.
Ah.
Gorgeous. And, like, all these tiny houses that cost €1 billion with a Maybach, and, like, you have, like, this 30-square-foot apartment, but you have a Maybach in front of it, so this is, like, your sleeping room.
Yeah, you eat in the Maybach.
Yeah, you eat in the Maybach. You have your personal servant in the Maybach. it's funny. But then, yeah, Kafka Summit was... it was the first time also where I was in the hotel where the conference was. So it was quite pragmatic to go upstairs.
So you can use the toilet on your in your hotel room instead of using the public toilet.
Yes,
that's what you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about, and I think it's quite good. I think that's a very comfortable situation.
It's convenient. It's convenient.
Of course, the Jay Crapes, the founder of Confluent, was having the first keynote, and then the next one was Martin Fowler. Is one of the signers of the Agile Manifest, I believe, and an author of several books on software testing, on refactoring, on event-driven design, on NoSQL databases. He wrote a whole lot of stuff, and he works for ThoughtWorks. And I think I mentioned him before. And it was all about like event-driven architectures, how to do it right, and why Kafka is a good solution for that. It was, of course, a lot of marketing.
Did they improve on KSQL? I mean, we tried it out for like a couple, half a year ago.
Like, so the first,
I mean, you have a KSQL t-shirt.
Yeah,
so
I got a KSQL t-shirt, and that's awesome. And I'm a little so it's still not SQL, and I think they did not do a good job in telling us that. They said, they said basically, you know, it's different because we are using a stream processor in the background, and then if you do SQL statements, like, it's not the same thing. They only mentioned it once, and I think you need to, like, if you name something SQL, I mean, SQL is like simple query language. Okay, that can be anything basically. But people are used to people are used to.
I think whoever introduces simple or something in the acronym of you should be like beaten.
It should be not allowed, and you should be banned from the industry.
Yeah, but anyhow, sorry for but it's the Angela Merkel style of not mentioning it too much. So
yeah, and you want to be careful because they seem to have a lot that, like, they raise a lot of attention with it, and people like people from BI, people from ETL teams. Really looking forward to have that, and I got a better understanding of what it does and what it's not doing. So it's not relational algebra. At some point, like, for instance, like a select is basically like a normal map. Basically, you go and say, give me that out of this, and like where is a filter, and then having is a post filter, and it's all like in a functional API. It's not 100% equivalent, but it works quite well. But what it doesn't do and cannot do is like these, because the data set is infinitive in a streaming application.
Yeah. You cannot count.
You can count, but only with windows, of course. Yeah. So you set a window and then you can count. But if you, like, depending on your window semantics, your count is not a count. Like you still call count function, but then you set the window to say like a shuffling window or like a tumbling
window. Or the last
hour. Yeah, and it will do it for the last hour, and then the count is on the last hour, but you need to know what you're doing. And what I found quite interesting was that, so yesterday there was a talk from one of the evangelists from Confluent that showed basically a whole pipeline, how he syncs a MySQL table into Kafka, then he has a click event stream from the website into another Kafka topic, and then he joins those with KSQL and makes a new stream of orders and feedback ratings from the website and puts that out to Elasticsearch, and he has not written any line of code.
That sounds like something we would like.
Yeah, so he's using a normal JDBC connector, so he captures the change stream from the MySQL table, then you put in a normal producer API where you say this is an IRC channel or this is like Twitter's or something. It's also a connector, you configure that connector, you name it, so it lands in the topic, it auto-creates a topic in Kafka, blah, blah, blah. Then the KSQL will basically do a transform and say, okay, I put out these and these and these values here, and from MySQL, I put out these and these values here, and then I put them, and then you just express a join, like a left join in KSQL, and put it out to another topic, And then on that topic, you connect Elasticsearch connector, which is already given, and just fan it out to Elasticsearch, and boom, done.
Boom.
And then you can like, and then the nice thing was you make an a real SQL statement against the MySQL database, and you change, for instance, the username, and like with, of course, it's an example for presentation, but
yeah, he was immediate, sure it would work.
Yeah, immediately, it showed up basically in Elasticsearch. So the whole join and the whole table function is like it, and with the exactly one semantics now, it runs all really like you want it to be.
Yeah.
But you only can do so much with it. You cannot still not nest arbitrary SQL statements within each other, so it's not orthogonal like the normal SQL. And
can I have when a message comes through, can I, we talked about it earlier, like, and I have a predefined ID, I can say, okay, if this ID comes along again, I only want to have this once, but I can only have the last one, not the first one, right? Or will it be the first one? So if
the that's the compact feature of topics, which has been long, is a long time as a feature in Kafka. So it will, you override basically based upon ID. So the document one, ID one at time zero, and at time one you come with ID number one, and it will override the first one if you enable compaction on that topic.
But can I do like immutability? So can I say if this ID
then
is
you
already
don't, yeah, then you have to disable compaction. But for KSQL, for instance, and for the whole stream API, that's part of being and allowing the exactly one semantics.
But
because it needs to put marker in the append logs.
But if I republish ID one, will it complain or will it go through if I have compaction off?
No, it will go through as a next record, but it will be different.
But the ID will be the same. I mean, I publish ID one with message.
Yeah. But there's still the offset count, right? So if you don't have compaction, there is to be like my first one message comes in, 10 different messages come in, something else, and then this message with the same ID comes in again at a different time to a different offset. So it's a different event process time and a different processing time. And then you have both message in the append log if you disable compaction.
But what I would like, and maybe if someone from conference listening.
Yeah, sure they do. Said it all over the place.
Because if I, for instance, I mean, my is like a stream processor that consumes logs from a container, right? And if I restart the stream, the log ingester or the log forwarder, then he will reprocess all the logs that were like part of the container. Because if he's not knowledgeable about where he stopped, but let's assume he's not, so he will just go through all the logs. And what I do is I hash the logs, like the timestamp and the content, and I have an ID, and this is an ID. And what I want Kafka to do is like, oh yeah, no, I saw this ID already, so go away. So that I don't have to have the state of what IDs I already saw in the log collector, but that Kafka is just saying, yeah, come on, guy, I saw this
so
ID
it's
again.
Not but
so that's
that
immutable. That Kafka rejects this ID because he says, yeah, I saw this already, go away.
It's not the way it works.
Damn it.
But you, like, with the compact, like, this log should not have been changed. Right?
No.
If it has the same content hash?
No, but it's not changing. It's just that the collector has restarted and he goes through all the logs.
But what you do is, like, you still transport it to the producer, but then the producer will basically issue it to the broker, and the broker will go, I have that ID. Because I have an index of all my IDs for that append log, I overwrite that.
Yeah, yeah, but the ID is not the number, right? The ever increasing number. It's like my ID is just a hash somehow. Right?
Yeah. But if you produce with a key value, or you do random producing, but if you produce with a key based upon that key, the compaction will handle it.
But if I have if the compaction is not enabled, then we will have
twice.
Yeah. And so my what I yeah I
but
mean
you want that do you want that compaction enabled and there's also another feature which is like these they call it Kafka transactions and so there is a custom idempotent producer that will do that and then you can start on the producing side you can start transactions so you know okay I mean for log shipping I think it doesn't make really sense it makes yeah. more sense for orderings or something else but
yeah for I mean
the redundancy you need I think we need to trust the broker here that it's really efficient what it does when it does the compaction I mean if you only work with duplicates all the time say like 50% of all your messages are duplicates then you should solve that problem somewhere else
yeah and the compaction I mean thinking about it if you have multiple brokers you cannot rely on knowing that some ID was already known by some other broker, right? If some broker goes down and you see another message, then it's just like you
see... No, the index is something that is also... Like, that's also... everything is distributed. So it will... Like, based on the ID you give it, it will end up being routed to the same partition all the time, always. That's some...
Yeah, but if this goes down and the new broker takes over one partition... It's easier to compact stuff. The last thing that comes along, like it's say the broker goes down, and then a new message comes with an ID. Then you don't have to care how often was seen by the previous broker because it's just yeah you saw the last one because it was sent to you after the first broker went down. So having it the other way around, like my immutability wish, then. It's a hard problem. Like you have to take count of the ID like in a distributed way, and then make sure that that's like okay, you Christian, nice idea, but shut the fuck up.
Yeah, no, don't do it. That's not how it works. Then there was a nice talk from Etsy, how to launch Kafka in Kubernetes.
We solved this with my Docker Compose files a long time ago.
Yeah, but they were solving the same problem. In the same way, actually. Now, a little bit different. But I know you
worse
use...
Worse or better?
You use console, I remember.
No!
One strategy was console. One strategy...
Was templating in Swarm.
Was templating in Swarm. But they encourage, like... So, first of all, it's not... Like, in Kubernetes, you cannot just simply... You don't want this, normally. And deploy Kafka or Elasticsearch, because...
Yeah,
You don't have, like, what do you do with your volumes? What is with the container going down? How do you make sure you see the same volume? But then there's this thing where Kafka and Elasticsearch, for instance, share data redundantly, so it's not really necessary. When you launch a new Kafka broker or a new Elasticsearch node, it will copy its data from the existing cluster and will be given this the data it needs to. But then Kubernetes has this notion of stateful sets, and where you then have control over the volumes and you get basically these what Docker has already for a long time is ding like ding basically ding. There's a service ID for that service instance so you get service name ID blah my Docker cluster whatever and have a consistent FQDN for routing to that thing and the same thing needs to be ensured when working with a Kafka because every client to the Kafka cluster needs to route to a specific broker. And you don't want it to have a generic DNS routable something, but you want to have that specific route. That but then something happens where the IP addresses doesn't add up, right? You run into this advertising problem, and every time your cluster where a node goes down or a container goes down and comes up for Kafka broker, for instance, you register with that broker with a new service IP or service FQDN into Zookeeper, but then Zookeepers is stupid and stores all your IP addresses forever. And there are some fuck-ups. And the guy from etcd said, for instance, Java DNS caching. The stupidest thing in the world because it never actually rotates the cache, refreshes the cache natively. So it will lose DNS. Connections. So funny situations where like you launch the Kafka, it runs for a month. Then one thing goes down, one comes up, and then nobody can see nobody. Anymore. It's like, why is that? And that's just because JVM DNS caching, for instance.
And isn't it in JVM, I counted it a couple of times, I'm not sure if it was with Kafka or something else, that underscores in host names, which are not allowed, I know, but underscores are not allowed, and then the Java application will say, oh, come on. So service underscore Kafka, idiot. That's not a name, my dear. We are like very serious with the standards, and we are good programmers in Java land. We know everyone is a good programmer, so you have to harass people.
Everyone has become a good rule follower, I would say.
So you have to harass people on standard host names, and underscore is not, obviously it's not a standard.
Yeah, I mean you can work around that, but what you cannot work around is that in conjunction with like this DNS caching and the fact that Zookeeper is a little bit naive in so everything, you really know that 10 years ago no one had in mind that the services come up and down and will be different. No, like this is nowhere in the design of Zookeeper to like clean up stuff or something. So this guy wrote a small little listener who will go and listens to the service API of the, what's the Kubernetes master thingy?
Yeah, master control, master that controller.
That controller thingy, and he listens to that feed, so when he sees Kafka broker down, Kafka spawned up, he will go and fill around with Zookeeper.
But this is an API server. I mean, he will go get events from the etcd over the API server.
Yeah, okay, then he listens to the API server, and he reacts to broker going down and up, and then rewrites stuff in Zookeeper so that the routing still works. And that's a little bit of... And at the end, he actually says he's not sure if he wants to do that journey again.
But this is a very fundamental thing. I mean, just a little excursion to Kubernetes. That's a very fundamental thing. Everyone does it that way, right? You have this key value store etcd that everyone that you use. Either you have your own or you use Kubernetes. And then you have listeners to events in etcd. And that's basically how every component in Kubernetes works. Everyone is listening to what's going on in etcd. It's a single source of truth. That's cool. I wonder how it scales. Like if we have trillions of billions and billions and billions of services listening to etcd. What do I know? No, but yeah. I mean, that's one way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one way to do it. But the nice
You're
thing also
sure
that
if it's the best way.
No, I mean like. The company I work for, we are not like big data systems are still basically
there's no best practice or then no blueprint for a big data
but
data
like
system
for testing scenarios. It would be nice to be able to just spin up in a isolated namespace a whole like all of the stack, and it as long as it's what's that, ephemeral. So that's that's my integration test, spin it up, go down, blah, whatever.
As long as you do not care about the longevity, like the longevity of the thing.
But basically there was, like the stateful sets seems to have now the future of, like they could not be part of a rolling deploy, or you had to write something up where you specify how the rolling deploy should work for stateful sets, and that seems to be...
I think that's coming. That's one of the challenges for Kubernetes, I think. There is like... And I have to admit that I'm lacking behind my Kubernetes enablement plan. So I have to do like the educate myself more. But there are a lot of objects that are iterations on older objects. So I think it was deployment, and then there was deployment set, or like mixed the terms. But anyhow, there are new versions of the objects which like makes some other objects obsolete, but no one is really keeping track. Or not, I'm not saying no one is keeping track, but it's hard to keep track for a normal administrator, I think, for a normal ops guy, and for a developer even more so. And so all these new objects coming out, and you have to keep track of them, and this is, I think, the challenge here. So,
but I think just in general, that's like, it's a general challenge currently. People releasing way too fast. I think it's stupid.
But yes and no. I think in Kubernetes, I think it's fine in cases where you abstract this by something. Like for instance.
No, yeah, stabilizing APIs. That's
No. But I mean, for us, we have Docker Compose and we have a CRD, like we have a service. Yeah, we have, but we shouldn't go too much into detail. But anyhow, you can do Docker Stack deploy against the Kubernetes endpoint, and it will create the services for you. So you as a developer, you don't have to care, right? And then it's fine if then the
Yeah, but then Docker, like then this feature needs to be...
moderated and
holding hands and be keeping up to date. I mean, the key is basically, and it's the same in Elasticsearch. They said basically the transport client always breaks when we change our code, and we always break client code, and that's shit.
No, but
and then they come up with like use the HTTP client because we make sure our HTTP API will be stable for at least major versions. So and then they like, but you have all these things that are. Like for Elasticsearch, you can now be a little more stable. Kafka, just in the 1.0.0 release, I think, made it possible so that consumers auto-detect their codec version and then still functioning. But if you were to update from 0.8 to 0.10, then you were breaking your consumers.
Yeah, I see where you're getting, but where you're going. But for Docker Compose, for instance, that's stable for very... in Docker terms, because we are only 3 years old, it's very stable, right?
I'm not saying everybody has the problem, but
and I think this needs to be done and adopted quite more in the industry. And there's Helm, and there are other abstractions on top of Kubernetes. I think this is the way to go. So you have a simple abstraction, maybe a little bit tailored towards your use case. If you are a shop that runs web servers, you don't need to flush out all the web server stuff. You can just have a little YAML file that says, I'm a web server. And in the back end, in the API that's changing or that's consuming your simple YAML file and creates all the objects, the guys, the developers and the administrators, the Kafka guys, they can decide what object is mapped to your simple abstraction, and then if there is an update to a newer version of Kubernetes with a new object, then they can say, okay, we switch this to this object, but we don't tell the developers, of course, because they will be scared. We will just change it in the back end, and the developer doesn't need to know even what Kubernetes objects is used. It's just
but interestingly, so for instance, for Kafka, there was also one talk was when they run into trouble, for instance, this codec thingy, right? Kafka made it exactly like that. So you were not knowing that basically your old consumer was still using another message format. And so in Kafka, there's like the messages in the broker have a specific format, which is versioned. And that makes total sense because the clients can like new versions have more features, blah, blah, blah. But then older clients will basically, the broker will then re-encode the message to the older format. And now an interesting thing happens. While Kafka's made for performance, the newest codec will always be off-heap data and will directly go onto paged files, basically into memory mapped files. But then the new codec consumes heap. So if you have a lot of old consumers and you are not made up for that scale to re-encode all your messages, say you have this huge log topic or huge metric topic and you have one application that is still 2 years behind, then you have a real problem at your hand because all your messages now will need heap space, like in a whole cluster, and that can quite easily have huge impacts on your cluster performance at all and stability of the cluster. And so yeah, it's transparent for the developer. But then at some point later, there might be a F up.
Yeah, but I think still we are talking about two different things, right? Kafka is performance, and Kafka is throughput. Kafka is things, and what we are talking about in the Docker Compose file is like having a stable description of a. It's not about performance.
But I think it's still like I'm giving you an interface to a system. You can trust it, and I have it versioned, and then still, where do I expect breaking?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there's a blurry line in between.
I have to, like, then there was a guy from CERN, I just need to finish it. And so, it's amazing.
CERN is amazing?
We have to, like, somebody needs to get us into it.
I know a couple of guys at CERN.
It's, like, that talk was so amazing. They produce for one experiment on one of these three experiments like 1 petabyte of data per second or something, like a ridiculous number, and how they like shuffle it all into like this huge HPC cluster to just hold it, and they have several petabytes on what's this digital bands, like
tapes.
Magnet bands, tapes, yeah. And then the guy was basically explaining how they monitor all of that, like not the real data itself that comes out of the LHC, but the like just making sure all the systems contributing work.
Yeah.
And that's a terabyte per day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or 3 terabyte per day. And then, but they use a Kafka cluster with just 10 beefy nodes. It's amazing, like to shuffle around all of that monitoring data. And they were doing some nice things where they overlaid logs with metrics and doing.
Well, but I'm
they
were using for yeah. years now.
But they were using actually Kafka Streams for that, and were really, really happy about that solution.
Yeah.
And I think it's very promising if the CERN, and the CERN also had these insight where they say, "What about we use upstream open source tools and we don't invent the wheel all the time ourselves?"
Stupid them.
They started that 2 years ago. And now they think it was a really good idea.
But adopting... No, it cannot be true.
Yeah.
Like, you have to reinvent the wheel all the time. That's, like, the best practice.
And what I also, like, also want to say is... I need to go back to KSQL for 1 second. So KSQL, that's really interesting. You can run KSQL as a headless thing. So there are two modes where you can... there will be a third mode, but... one, you have an interactive mode where you just get a shell, basically, and connect to the cluster and have GVM processes running, and you issue your SQL statements, and then you can interactively work with it. But you can also launch, for instance, make it a container.
I'm listening.
And then you were writing, you interactively test your SQL scripts, and then you all your commands that you want to have, you put into an SQL file, add that to the KSQL executable, and launch the whole thing in headless mode into your cluster, connecting to your Kafka cluster. And then it acts like a normal consumer group, basically, starting the stream processes for you. And this is a statically running...
Wait, come again.
You have your logs topic.
I was mildly interested before, and now I'm hooked.
So you have your metrics topic, and in your metrics topic, for some reasons, you have a unique ID that correlates with a unique ID in logs.
Yeah.
Now you make an SQL statement saying, read from that log, get me the application name and the value out of it, and the message from the log line. And on the metrics topic, you say, yeah, get me that application name and get me that value from that metric and the metric name. And then you say, join that based upon my cool idea I came up with. And you have, this is a three, like, first is a transformation, second is a transformation, third is a join.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is basically you fan out to your destination topic.
Yeah.
And these are three SQL statements you write into a file called myfile.sql. You add that file to your containerized version of the KSQL Java process.
Mm-hmm.
You launch that, scale it up, and you have a statically running ETL that processes the logs and events, the logs and the metrics topic continuously and produces output data on it. And there is no code involved. You just have your three SQL statements where you would normally, like in a Java API, would write, like, that would probably end up being 300, up to 150. Yeah, around hundreds of lines, depending on how complex you make it. But I think that's quite impressive. So you just launch. And the good thing is you don't want your BI SQL noob to go interactively in your production cluster and write some really heavy SQL statements. You just go and say, yeah, try it out. Here's your copy of the data.
Yeah.
Then you give it to prod and say, look. And it's just a container with an SQL script, and that's all your ETL is. That's, I think that's really, I guess, goosebumps. Look.
Yeah, yeah. And I think either I have to retire tomorrow to have the time. but I tried when we, the last time I had some off time for my pet projects, I tried to create the Docker events stream and try to create KSQL topics for all of the different streams and then make KSQL like map everything together. And this is exactly what you're talking about, right? Having the Docker events be published to Kafka with the container ID and such and service ID, and then map this and then publish all the metrics also through Kafka, and then map this container ID with the container ID of the events, and boom.
Yeah.
And then also the logs, like map this with the same container ID. And everything is JSON yeah, already, so it should not be too simple. But
the,
need
the
more
nice
time.
Thing is, you get only one semantics, so your computing, your counts are accurate in the context of the stream application. Every SQL script in KSQL always translates to a stream processor running it in a separate thread, if you want. Mm-hmm. And then the KSQL instances share basically, like make sure they are just consumers to Kafka. So they have the whole consumer group feature and the failover mechanics are all in there. So, and with the, like every through, like there's an APR call in Kafka SQL in Kafka Streams where you go like from this topic, go through or make an aggregation. There is always a producer involved, but this from now on will be always the idempotent producer that ensures this is transactional. Mm-hmm. So you always get exactly one semantics out of the box. You don't even need to, like, you don't think about it anymore. It's really, really, really nice. And yeah, we need to be fast in launching because it makes so much stuff obsolete. Yeah, so much code will not be written.
Yeah, and you become more data scientist and not programmer anymore, right?
Because you really need focus to focus on the function.
Yeah, you write your SQL statement, and once you get used to it and you have some experience with it, it's
but
super
to fair,
easy
they,
to.
Yeah, but they also assume always clean data, and that every company has legacy, right? Yeah, there's this one company not known to man. It's perfect.
The one that is not, that is just started. At T0, you don't have legacy.
And then they hired a Ruby developer. I'm sorry.
Don't be.
Yeah, and I think that's really good. We need to finish, but I need to complain about Audi.
Okay, go ahead.
It was a complete, like, I think it's, so he was even having a keynote. So he was like the fourth most important speaker on a Kafka summit. And this guy, like, I'm not the best in English, but I think people can understand me. But this was the guy from Schwaben who talked the worst English I've ever heard, apart from some other Germans.
How is he called? The EU commissioner?
Yeah. Okay, it was not that bad.
Okay.
No. But... And then it was like he basically comes on stage and says, like, this is a new Audi. The new Audi produces metrics and events and logs worth of 1 terabyte per day. And this is why we make money out of it. So, like, after having the diesel affair and everything, the guy comes up and has the balls to say, I scrape all your data from, like, a 70,000 euro car you buy from us. We get all your data. We sell all your data, we make money out of your data, and we spy on you. And the best thing is, at the end of his talk, what's the goal of Audi? The goal of Audi is give you back time. So they're creating this whole dystopia of total, like, citizen surveillance for saving you an hour on your trip because your auto is, like, autonomously driving. What the fuck? I was so... I will never buy an Audi again. Never.
Again? You had an Audi before?
Yeah, I have rented some. I will not even rent an Audi anymore. This is... I think it's mind-boggling. It was really, at the end, like, I thought Audi was about sport, technology. You want to drive your Audi. But then they make all this bullshit coming up so that you can not drive the Audi anymore and you give away all your data. It's...
No win-win.
And he was dreaming up stuff like... the new data is not the oil, but the new data is the DNA. What the fuck does it mean? Like, why? Like, this is just buzzwords bullshit. And then we will do a new Google Street Maps thingy because all our Audis collect all the videos where they are driving.
That it's sounds like data privacy.
Yeah, and the people you capture while you're driving through the city are like, yeah.
Deep learning will solve it.
That's and they problem. Jam the whole G... Like, that's also... Like, it's all bad about it. The new G5 network that comes from mobility in Europe, that will be probably just jammed with car data traffic. No, they really... Like, they said, like, we are building data center in every major city around Europe to capture that traffic that we will send out of our cars. And BMW does the same.
Edge computing.
I was really pissed. Sorry, and now I'm done.
No, but this, I mean, yeah. Idiots. But 5G will allow this to happen, right? We can have a lot more parallel connections to, and you play your, I mean, like streaming services, like will like that with interactions. Anyhow, you can have much more connections at the same time, so you will serve much more users, yeah, and you will have like latency will be 10 times as fast as currently. So we have 40 milliseconds on 4G, we'll have 4 milliseconds on 5G. But yeah, I know.
And it's great. It's just that it's like he was so on the money, and he was so on, we don't give a fuck about any human. It's our business, and we want to make money out of our customers. And I think at some like this is like we can also say let's get back to slavery. I don't understand these mindsets.
And yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah, it's sad. Sad story.
I think it's sad.
Yeah, sure it is sad. Okay, cool.
We're over time.
Rant about Audi. I think we should wrap up because I need to start.
Oh, one perfect tip. If you launch Kafka KSQL now, what you definitely want to do is print topic, because that's like a tail for the topic. Just print topic name.
It's Kafka Cat.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have to, you open your like your shell, and then you just, it's just print topic. It's that simple. Mm. And you see what's in the topic.
Cool.
Yeah, I didn't do that. So all pro right. tip.
That's it for this episode.
And the next one will come whenever we feel like.
Yeah, but let's hope we can make it a more regular thing.
We are too ambitious.
Yeah, we are too ambitious. But we will try, guys, or the one that's still subscribed to this podcast.
We can re-announce it via our social medias.
Yeah, influenza. Yeah. Okay, then...
Farvel.
Yeah, farvel. See you, guys. Bye-bye.